So Bruce Cockburn wrote All the Diamonds the day after he realized that he had become a Christian. And he saw those diamonds on a boat ride through the Stockholm Archipelago, which is a bunch of barren islands out there in the North Sea. And so the song starts with these words: "All the diamonds in this world that mean anything to me are conjured up by wind and sunlight sparkling on the sea." Cockburn himself said of this song, "What's important is recognition that there is a spiritual side of life that you need to pay attention to." Well, and we know that. In this song, the spiritual is conjured up by wind and sunlight sparkling instead of by the actual diamonds that we wear on our ring fingers. Cockburn says, you know, there is a real distinction between materialism and a sense of the cosmos as being deeper than that. Are we still working on finding that deeper place too? You know, I doubt that there is a single person here this morning who doesn't believe that there's a deeper meaning, that there's a deeper and fuller way to live life, that there's more depth in each of us than we sometimes even dare to explore. Going deeper can be very hard, even scary. We'd rather go shallow. The next line in Cockburn's song actually explores shallow. "I ran aground in a harbor town, lost the taste for being free." So Cockburn suggests here that even if the universe really is a deeper place, it is nevertheless full of temptation to live shallow. Wine, women, song, gambling, spending money recklessly in a harbor town. But even if we're not mariners, here in modern Canada, we have all kinds of shallow temptations that face us all the time, too. I mean, shallow can be as simple as the latest gadget that we don't need, but we purchase for the thrill of those endorphins rushing through our head when we push the buy button on Amazon.ca. Feels good. Shallow can be as simple as giving someone the finger at an intersection when he or she turns late on a left light. Shallow can be as simple as drinking a few too many glasses of wine, although it isn't shallow anymore if then you get into your car and drive home. But shallow, it can actually be a kind of a relief too, don't you think? For example, ignoring the memory of parents who did not nurture us, or teachers who hurt us, or classmates who despised us. You know, if we don't go there, if we refuse to go deep on these deep disappointments, then staying shallow can seem like a relief, whereas cleaning the wounds of such hurts, probing for shrapnel, putting ice on the wound, oh, that hurts. So we don't want to go there. We stay shallow. Or again, shallow might be knowing on the border of our consciousness, somewhere out here, we know that the world, its climate, its refugees, its racism, we know that all that stuff is out there and it's really complicated, expensive, life-altering solutions are required, sacrifices. We know all this on the border of our consciousness. But rather than go deep, we then ignore all that stuff. We act as if these problems can't be solved, that they're not our fault anyway. And so we live shallow. Because we, in our comfortable cocoons, we can afford to ignore these problems, even though many of the most vulnerable people in the world cannot ignore them. Going deep, though? Spending more than enough time with our kids or our partner? Backing up our glib, "Oh, I love yous," with time and energy and focus, rather than losing ourselves at work? That's hard. Engaging in self-examination and reflection about morality, meaning, and the great issues of our day? Changing our ingrained habits when we need to repent of them? I mean, that is all very, very hard stuff. That all takes time and courage. The payoff is far in the future. Not going deep also has a long-term and personal cost, though. Last year, I bookmarked a short article that I saw in Forbes magazine, "The Top 5 Regrets of People on Their Deathbed." The article took the internet by storm. Besides Forbes, it appeared in Business Insider, Huffington Post, England's Daily Mail. It was everywhere. Somehow, this article really struck a chord with people. One, people regretted working so hard because it was the thing to do. They regretted that they worked so hard at the expense of their family, number one. Number two, they regretted not taking the time to express their true inner feelings to others or even to themselves, so they never knew their true inner feelings. They lived up here rather than down there. They regretted a lack of courage to live in a way that was true to their inner selves, rather than being just carried along by the latest fads and fashions and higher share valuation at any cost. They regretted not staying true. This was interesting to me. They regretted not staying true to their best friends. And five, they wished that they had understood that at least for those who do not struggle with some kind of depression, but they wished they had understood that happiness was at least partly a choice and required doing the hard work of changing old patterns and emotions that we call conversion. Now, actually, I've been there myself. Especially on the inner feelings and the happiness fronts, I think. For the last 10 years in my previous denomination, perhaps because I was on something of a nice, easy ride, perhaps because I was out of touch with what was really going on deep inside of me, I was growing increasingly unhappy. I sensed that something was wrong, but I liked the attention of being one of the most visible leaders in that denomination. I liked the perks, the travel, the pay that went with being president of a graduate school. I even liked the opportunity to sort of retire to the quiet little church and a house by the beach in a scenic Ontario harbor town, Cobourg. Still, even though things were going swimmingly on the surface, I felt that something was wrong. I wasn't myself. So finally, encouraged by family, my kids, friends, I confronted the sources of my growing unhappiness. And again, with support, their support, I found the courage to plumb my inner depths, to face up to my doubts. You know, I don't want to hold myself out as some sort of exemplar. It took me years to figure things out. It should have been a lot easier. I'm a slow learner. But I discovered that in my situation, at least, happiness was the choice to get in touch with what I was really thinking and feeling, but that was only on the very fringe of my mind, the choice to leave my past and its perks behind and to start over in the United Church and here at Lawrence Park. I left Coburg, my harbor town, and its simple pleasures and headed out to sea again. So Bruce Coburn uses that image of heading out to sea, the image of a ship. Thank God, sings Coburn, he sent some gull-chased ship to carry me to sea. And at the end of the song, the image returns. His ship comes shining like a crystal swan in a sky of suns. His ship comes shining. Coburn's ship image is very helpful when considering what it means to go deep. As Coburn well knows from the very beginning of Christianity, the story, you'll remember this, it's in Mark chapter 4, the story of how Jesus sat in a storm-tossed boat in the middle of a raging sea and then commanded the wind and the waves to be still. That was a favorite story in the early church. And thinking of the disciples and their terror, Christians adopted the ship as one of their first images of what the church should be like. The ship, the church, is a safe place in a storm-tossed sea. Churches should be good, safe places for doing the hard work of going deep. They should be a good place to leave the shallows behind, or at least to reconsider what is shallow in your life or in mine. And this is so in a lot of ways. As a church that is, we say we are united, unlimited, unorthodox. We here are invited to come wondering and unsure and to be receptive to each other's doubts and their each other's crazy ideas too, and I think that's true of us. For example, I mean, just a few examples. We have a meditation group in this church where a number of men and women truly, really share with each other and find community and wholeness. Group B, women, United Church Women, that's a community too, one where in 100 small and significant ways members reach out to each other, watch out for each other. But that's just for example. We have book clubs. We have Bible studies. We have Sunday coffee time, which should not be ignored. We have youth groups where they discuss contemporary media and how it affects spirituality. You know, entering into these groups takes a risk. And then plumbing some of those depths takes work. But in this church, I like it that when I look around, I see people trying to go deep, at least deeper. Why? Well, Coburn sings near the end of the song these words, 2,000 years and half a world away, dying trees still grow greener when you pray. These words are an allusion to Jesus' death on the cross. But you know, a few years after he wrote this song, Coburn said a little bit more about these words. He said that in Jesus' wounds, if we are willing, we see a mirror image of our own woundedness. The sorts of wounds that I described earlier in the service, as well as we see an image of the woundedness and the hurts and the struggles of people we love, our neighbors, other people in the church. And Coburn says, quote, we're bound together by our wounds. We have no choice about that. And then he adds, I suppose the wounds of Christ on the cross, those are archetypes of these wounds that we all have. It is in our woundedness, says Colburn. It's in our woundedness that we all have a connection point. The temptation we all face in choosing to go to church, in choosing to live in this space, is to be satisfied with church on the surface. Church is a club. Church is a shallow place. Church is a social status symbol. Church is a place where I meet my card-playing friends. Church is a service delivery institution. Church is a rental space for organ music or for preschool, like, you know, the Granite Club is for sports or exercise, or like a bank is for mortgages. Just a surface thing. The temptation we all face when it comes to church is not to think about the church and its people and its spirituality very much at all, to ignore that. The temptation we all face, even in choosing to go to church, is choosing not to go deep ever. But in the end, that kind of shallow church, that kind of easy come, easy go church, that kind of a bauble church, just a diamond for decoration and not a place to really practice going deep. That's not the kind of church we want. Real church, what we aim for here at least, real church is conjured up by wind and sunlight sparkling on the sea. Real church is a ship that hovers over the deep. A place not merely material, but spiritual. It's a place full of, in Colburn's words, the church is a place full of wounded healers, where we can honestly express what lives in our lives, where we can make lifelong friends who will keep our confidences, where we nurture family, where we seek and embrace a happiness deeply rooted. Now, it isn't easy. It isn't shallow. But what I love about Lawrence Park Community Church is that we have definitely set sail. Something we celebrate now, not only by obviously listening to the choir do Bruce Colburn's song, but also in the final song we'll sing today, She Comes Sailing.